Charles Lucky Luciano is considered by some people to be the father of modern organized crime. He was the founder and original chairman of the Mafia Commission. He was also arguably the most powerful mobster in the United States before being forced to Italy as part of a deal with prosecutors. I'm Brian McCoy. Welcome to the Mob Files. Hello everyone and welcome into episode 9 of the Mob Files. Our subject this week is Charles Lucky Luciano. Luciano is largely responsible for modernizing the American Mafia and for introducing a more collaborative way of doing business. Just a quick reminder to subscribe or follow if you enjoy today's episode. New episodes come out on Thursdays. Okay, let's dive in. Salvatore Lucania was born on November 24, 1887 in Sicily. He would soon become known as Charles Luciano. The Luciano family immigrated to the United States in 1906, when Charles was 9 years old. The family lived on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, alongside many other Italian families. Luciano took to the streets at a very early age. He was determined to be successful, and he believed being a criminal was the best way to go about it. And there may have been some truth, there likely was some truth to that belief, as I've discussed on previous episodes. As recent immigrants to the country, and especially at that time, the Italians weren't treated particularly well, and it was difficult for them to get ahead in other industries. One of Luciano's first rackets was offering protection to Jewish kids from Irish and Italian gangsters for a fee. This is actually what led to Luciano meeting Meyer Lansky. Luciano tried to shake down Lansky for a protection fee, but Lansky basically told him to go fuck himself. Luciano was impressed that Lansky stood up to him. The interaction sparked what would become an extremely profitable, decades-long friendship between the two. Luciano got into serious trouble for the first time when he was busted selling heroin in 1916. He was also picked up on a number of other occasions for charges including assault and robbery. By the time Prohibition started in 1920, and even though he was still very young, Luciano was already a well-known gangster. He had also made significant connections, including with Vito Genovese and Frank Costello. It was around the same time that he started working for Arnold Rothstein. Rothstein was a new breed of gangster, and he wasn't even really a gangster at first. He was a businessman and was just as comfortable sitting down with bankers and politicians as he was with other gangsters. Rothstein served as a mentor of sorts for Luciano. The best example of this was Rothstein leading him into the bootlegging business. He didn't just teach Luciano about the trade, he went as far as providing the financial support for Luciano, Genovese, and Costello to run alcohol. The bootlegging business was extremely profitable for Luciano. In a few short years, he was making millions of dollars a year selling booze. Another one of the key connections Luciano made as a young man was with Joe Masseria. Masseria was what the younger mobsters called a mustache Pete. This was their term for mafia men who were beholden to the old way of doing things. These guys had largely started their criminal careers over in Sicily and wanted to stick to the old ways and customs more than the younger gangsters wanted to, who had more of an American flair. One example of these old school beliefs was that the mafia should only work with other Italians, and even more specifically, a lot of the old school Sicilians believed that they should only work with other Sicilians. A lot of members of the younger generation of mobsters, including Luciano, thought that this was foolish. They thought that they should work with anyone who could help them make more money. Luciano continued his work for Masseria, but he also started to work behind the scenes to rally the support of younger mobsters. This list includes an all-star cast of future big mob names: Carlo Gambino, Tommy Lucchese, Albert Anastasia, Joe Bonanno, big names. Luciano had a vision for a national crime syndicate where various organized crime groups, Italian, Irish, Jewish, all of them could work together to make as much money as possible. As I said, Luciano continued to work for Joe Masseria during this time. In the late 20s, Masseria's organization was at war with Salvatore Maranzano's organization. Maranzano was cut from the same cloth as Masseria. He was an old-school Sicilian boss. Masseria was not faring well in the war, and Luciano made the difficult decision to flip on his boss. Maranzano agreed to let Luciano take over Masseria's crew if he helped take him out first. On April 15, 1931, Masseria was eating and playing cards in a restaurant in Brooklyn. Luciano was there with them as well. Things went exactly as planned, and Luciano went to the bathroom just as the gunman entered. Masseria was dead, and as promised, Luciano took over his operations and served as second in command to Maranzano. Maranzano quickly consolidated power and declared himself boss of all bosses in New York City. It was also at this time that Maranzano officially recognized five families in New York City. The modern-day La Cosa Nostra organization was starting to take shape. Luciano played along with all of this, but he had a lot of the same complaints about Maranzano that he had had about Masseria. He did not understand why Maranzano was being excessively greedy in his eyes. Collaboration was the key to success and would allow all parties to make more money. Word eventually reached Maranzano that Luciano might be planning a takeover. And, you know, you might be asking yourself, why would the top boss be concerned about this? But at that time, Luciano had gained a lot of influence with a lot of mobsters in the organization, and it wasn't crazy to think that if he decided to, he actually could make the takeover happen. And so Maranzano put a hit out on him. Fortunately for Luciano, there was someone close to Maranzano looking out for him. I'm talking about Tommy Lucchese. Lucchese alerted Luciano that he needed to be on the lookout, and this is a great example of the influence and connections that Luciano had built up paying off for him. Luciano did more than just be on the lookout. He decided that he was going to be proactive and take action. In September 1931, Luciano sent assassins to Maranzano's office. They impersonated law enforcement officers to disarm Maranzano's security, and then they stabbed Maranzano before shooting him to death. The younger generation had officially arrived. Luciano reached the peak of his powers after Maranzano's death. He had extensive operations in a number of areas, including bookmaking, loan sharking, and labor racketeering. He was likely the most powerful boss in the country at that point. Despite this, he was hesitant to declare himself boss of all bosses. As I talked about earlier, he believed that it was best for the families to work together. He thought that having one man in control of the whole organization could cause problems between the families, and of course he was also worried that if he took that position himself, he would have a massive target on his back. Instead, he came up with a new idea, the commission, which is basically a governing board for the mafia. The basic idea is that the top mafia figures throughout the country would meet to discuss any feuds between the families, make any major decisions, and of course appoint or approve of new bosses and different families. Luciano had called a meeting in late 1931 to pitch the idea to the other bosses. They agreed and the commission was officially established. The five families were all granted a seat, of course, and a seat was given to Chicago and Buffalo as well. Philly and Detroit would be added in later years. In 1935, Thomas Dewey, who was a former United States attorney, was appointed a special prosecutor by the New York governor to investigate organized crime in New York City. One area of focus for Dewey was on prostitution. The investigation led them to Dutch Schultz. Schultz didn't like the intrusion on his business, and he actually asked Luciano to approve a hit on Dewey. Luciano knew that killing a high-ranking government lawyer would bring even more heat down on the organization, and said no. The commission agreed with this take, but Schultz decided that he was going to ignore them and go ahead with the hit anyway. The commission found out about this and approved a hit on Schultz, and he was killed shortly thereafter. It was around that same time that Dewey started to turn his attention to Luciano. To be more accurate, it was actually Dewey's top deputy, Eunice Carter, who built the case against Luciano. She and her team had interviewed a lot of prostitutes throughout the city, and they noticed that Luciano's name started to come up a lot. And they targeted him as a big player in a major prostitution ring in New York City. Luciano caught wind of this, and in March of 1936, he left New York to lay low in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Now, he wasn't officially wanted at this time, he wasn't a fugitive, he just thought it would be better to get out of the city for a while. But shortly thereafter, he was indicted on charges of compulsory prostitution in New York, and authorities sought to bring him back. He was able to stall this for a few weeks, but eventually he was hauled back to face the charges. His trial began on May 11, 1936. Dewey's team called 68 witnesses against Luciano. This included pimps, prostitutes, madams, and cops. After the prosecution rested, Luciano was worried that they had built a strong case, and he decided to take the stand in his own defense. Most lawyers will tell you that it's almost never a good idea for a defendant to take the stand in their own defense, and Luciano's lawyer apparently gave him the same advice. And it was good advice, especially in this trial, because the prosecution actually hadn't specifically tied Luciano to the ring. They had a bunch of evidence of prostitutes and others saying that they had heard Luciano's name mentioned whenever collectors were trying to pick up money and things like that, but nothing to tie him to the actual prostitution ring itself. But, of course, the decision to take the stand in your own defense is ultimately up to the client, and Luciano went ahead and did it. He went head-to-head with Dewey, and it really didn't go very well for him. Dewey still didn't tie Luciano specifically to the prostitution ring, but he used the cross-examination to expose a lot of Luciano's relationships with other criminals, and also that Luciano didn't exactly pay his taxes as he was supposed to. Despite the lack of evidence specifically linking Luciano to the prostitution ring, he was found guilty on 62 counts of compulsory prostitution on June 7, 1936. He was then sentenced to 30 to 50 years in prison by the judge. Now, as I've hinted at a couple times, there's some question as to the extent that Luciano was actually involved in the prostitution ring. Again, most of the evidence was just bits of conversations where Luciano's name had been mentioned as what seemed like a scare tactic to get people to pay up. Regardless, the conviction stood and Luciano was on his way to Sing Sing Correctional Facility in New York. Luciano continued to run the family while he was locked up. He would get his orders out through other high-ranking figures, including Vito Genovese. In 1938, the United States Supreme Court declined to take up his case, and at that point he had exhausted all of his potential appeals. It was around the same time that Luciano started to accept that it was going to be difficult to run things day to day, and he appointed Frank Costello as the acting boss of the family. Genovese had fled to Italy to avoid legal trouble, and so that left Costello as the obvious choice. Luciano's sentence was actually commuted in 1946, but the story of how it unfolded is fascinating. During World War II, concerns over national security were obviously heightened. The government was concerned about enemy agents entering the country. One of the areas of particular concern was in New York City. The government needed to be on its A-game with port security. They would need some help from the outside to make this happen. The Mafia had control over New York's waterfront at that time. They controlled a lot of the labor unions who had jobs there, and of course, they had people on the inside on shipping industries as well. The government could not afford to have large-scale labor strikes or sabotage occurring. It would make their job all the more difficult. Now, apparently, they approached Luciano and asked him to help keep things calm and also to provide any relevant information his organization could gather to the Navy. It's debatable how much Luciano provided on the intelligence front, but he certainly had the power to at least keep things calm so the government could do its work. As a result of the help he provided, his sentence was commuted with the stipulation that he would not push back against deportation to Italy. It was really a win-win for the government. They got Luciano's help, and the end result was him getting out of prison, true, but he was still being forced out of the country. They wouldn't have to deal with him anymore. Well, at least not directly. Luciano was deported to Italy, but he didn't stay there very long. Being careful to disguise his movements, he moved to Cuba, to Havana. He wanted to still have influence over crime in the United States, and being in Cuba made that more realistic than if he was in Italy. Luciano and Meyer Lansky organized a conference of the major U.S. mob figures in Havana in 1946. The Havana Conference, as it became known, featured representatives from all over the U.S. New York City was, of course, well represented, but there were leaders from Chicago, New Orleans, Florida, in New Jersey, among others. At the conference, Luciano again turned down the position of boss of bosses. He still believed the commission was the best way to govern. However, he was confirmed as the leader of the commission once again. The other major points of discussion at the conference were drug trafficking and concerns over operations at the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas. The drug trade was of particular concern to Luciano. He had set up a network in which drugs could be shipped to various parts of the United States, including New York City and Tampa, from Cuba. A short time after the conference concluded, U.S. authorities became aware that Luciano was in Cuba. They were convinced that he was responsible for an increase in the drug trade in the United States, and they sanctioned Cuba until they gave in and sent him back to Italy. Shortly after arriving back in Italy, Luciano was imprisoned for about a month and was released in May of 1947. He mostly stayed out of trouble after this, but he was picked up for short periods of time in 1949 and 1951. In 49, it was because they suspected him of being involved in the drug trade, and in 1951, it had something to do with importing cash and a foreign car illegally. In the 50s, Luciano had lost most of his influence in the United States. Now, it's important to note that Vito Genovese and Luciano had been at each other's throats for a long time. Luciano and Costello simply did not trust Genovese. Luciano had even gotten into a physical altercation and, to be frank, beat the shit out of Genovese at the Havana conference. But now was Genovese's time to strike. He ordered a hit on Costello, which failed, but it did lead to Costello retiring and agreeing to pass over control to Genovese. The next target was Albert Anastasia, who was another Luciano loyalist. On October 25th, 1957, Anastasia was killed while getting a haircut in Manhattan. Of course, this is one of the most infamous hits in the mob's history. The images of Anastasia covered in towels lying on the barbershop floor have become a big part of history. It was later revealed that Genovese and Carlo Gambino had worked together to organize the hit. After Anastasia was killed, Genovese organized the infamous Apalachin meeting in rural New York. He wanted to make it clear that he intended to be a major player on the national stage going forward. But unfortunately for him, the farmhouse where the meeting was held was raided by authorities, and more than 60 mafia figures were arrested. This did a lot of damage to Genovese. He was blamed by a lot of members of the mafia for this happening. They didn't have to worry about him much longer, though. He was sent to prison a few years later on drug charges. Genovese ended up with a family named after him, but it had come at a great cost. Luciano lived out his remaining years in Italy. He died on January 26, 1962 of a heart attack. He was 64 years old. He had a funeral in Naples, but he is actually buried in New York City. More than 2,000 people attended the service in New York. Charles Lucky Luciano is widely considered the father of the modern American mafia. He was responsible for the creation of the commission, completely transforming the way the organization operated. He is certainly one of the most influential gangsters in history. Thank you for listening to episode 9 of The Mob Files. If you enjoyed, please be sure to subscribe or follow and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. Thanks again and have a great day.